Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, everyone. You're all very welcome to the show. I'm joined today by Sports Show's Lee Costello. And Lee, the hurling was better than the football at the weekend. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So, hurling today.
No complaints.
Good stuff. There's no debating it. So, football snobs, you can skip on if you want. But look, there was so much in the hurling at the weekend that I'm confident we'll be able to hold on to your attention. There's a Conor Myler interview at the end, but it's all hurling now. And I'm delighted to say that Conall Keeney, former Dublin Jewel player, is in with us to mull it all over with us. So, Conall, a happy man after an important win for Dublin at the weekend.
Hey, lads. Important win for Dublin hurling. Yeah, absolutely. I'd say that game against Wexford was earmarked from day one. They probably would have thought they would have got over the Westmeath game anyway, and probably... I think they would have thought they would have got a result up in Antrim, but obviously they just got a draw. So it was this game was what it was coming down to for both themselves and Wexford. And look, got the result. Probably not playing really well, but getting over the line is the most important thing, you know.
Definitely, lads. I don't think there's any other place to start the show really than the GAA Go hurling coverage kind of discussion. It's been a hot topic all week, I suppose. Last week, Tom Dempsey was talking a lot about it during the week. Tom Dempsey from Wexford, and Donal O'Cusack went off on a Sunday game special rant really on Sunday. But a lot of the time when Donal goes off on these rants, I don't think a lot of people, sometimes he kind of goes a bit too far, and people, you know, think he's kind of, you know, don't really see where he's coming from. But I think yesterday it went down very well because, he had a good point.
Yeah, I thought he raised some really good points. He was very candid, very honest, and that just comes across well. My other sport outside of GAA is boxing. You know, I love boxing. I love when a big fight's together and it's the two best in the world in the ring. You know, I think there's very few things that's as entertaining as that. But the sport itself has completely destroyed itself, you know. Like, say Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury are finally going to get in the ring. You know, the two biggest names, probably. And I have a subscription for TalkSake to Sky Sports, BT Sports, DAZN, which does all the boxing. There's three subscriptions. I pay my TV license to the BBC, say, up the north. So there's more money. Nearly £100 a month, all in. And then if that fight was to happen, it would be £25, £30 euro or pay-per-view one-off payment on top of that as well. And then because everything's so split and divided, I can't actually sit on the sofa and be like, right, I fancy a bit of boxing, and what channel or show is going to give me, you know, or fulfill that sort of need. And GAA could be at risk of doing that if it doesn't have a home as such. You know, it needs to have one major place to sit on where people can enjoy it. There's loads of like panel discussions and interviews and different shows around it, and it doesn't have that at the minute. And I think that was Donal's point, really. You know, it's been left to the side. Tipperary and Cork were playing at the weekend, and it was very much, this is on GAA Go. If you want it, pay a tenner. If not, don't. and that was the end of it, you know, and it's not a good place for the GAA to be.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. We've missed two absolute thrillers in Munster so far. Clare and Limerick could arguably be the best game of the year. Cork and Tipperary was an absolute thriller as well. Two brilliant games, and look, they're on GAA Go, but you know, some people, whether it's an old person, they're not able to get GAA Go set up. It's not the same as having it on live coverage. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And look, I suppose the real trouble is that down the line, the football championship is coming up fairly sharpish. That's coming in 2 weeks. And the best of hurling might be behind us without having us showing the thing live. So the hurling could be swamped when it comes down to, you know, with that. So I don't know. What do you think of the whole GAA Go debate, Conor?
Look, I bought it there the last day. I spent, whatever, 78 quid to try and get all the games. And I did it for a reason to, obviously, I wanted to watch the games. Couldn't figure out how to get it on the telly. So you ended up watching it on a laptop. And then I was trying to get it from my parents' house. And it was just a nightmare. So my parents didn't see the game. But I think it just summed it up. I watched the game. And then we have a little green outside the house. My young lad was just poking around after the game. The screen was full of kids poking and playing football. And I thought they were all just after the match. I says, lads, just watch the match. They're like, no, what match? No match. There was no match on telly. Like, so these are what we're trying to preach. We're trying to promote the games in schools and in GAA clubs and everything. And yes, these kids that are hurling fans and will watch any hurling game, but there was no game on telly for them. Like, they have no idea about GAA Go. And just because their parents aren't maybe GAA in GAA clubs or into the GAA themselves, they haven't a clue about GAA Go. All they do is put on the telly, and if it's Sky Sports or it's RT, they're going to put it on for the kids and watch something. So, and not having that there, it's I don't always agree with Donal Logan. Some of the stuff that he says, I think, is a little bit off the mark sometimes, but he was spot on last night with what he said. Like, we need to promote the game. We're just killing it. We're killing hurling. And now with all of these games coming with all the football, it's just going to get worse. And hurling is a game we need to promote. And we're always talking about going to Dubai or we're going to the States to promote hurling. Like, we need to promote it here. We need to promote it in Dublin. We need to get more county players going to the schools, get them out there. Like, how many times, I know as a player, people don't want to do interviews and they don't want to do this, that, or but you'll find if someone wants to promote a product, the players will come out if you entice them right to come out. So why aren't the GAA doing that? Why aren't we promoting these games, you know, coming into the big games of the weekend? You'll hear nothing in the papers probably of the big games that are going to be with Limerick and Tip or whatever is going to be on this weekend. So there's very little talk about it. Like, and this is all leading down, little talk, not on the telly. I know it comes GAA Go. And so, and then we give out to say, oh, our game is, you know, only a certain amount of counties are going to be able to win the All-Ireland. Only a certain amount of counties will play the Liam McCarthy. Like, so we're shooting ourselves in the foot, as far as I can see. And get more money behind it. Someone in the GAA needs to get a hold of this before the whole game is destroyed, you know. Now, I know that's very dramatic, but we're certainly going the right way about trying to kill it anyway.
Yeah, well, that is the thing. Like, GAA Go, do you know, you have the game there, and someone who's, you know, they're tech savvy, they know what's going on, so they'll be able to set it up. But at the same time, I was the same as Conal. I was trying to set it up to get it to connect from the laptop to the telly, and you're nearly 15 minutes at it. Yeah. Just because it's not the easy thing to do. I know some of the boys have the dodgy boxes and they're getting away with it. Not pointing any fingers here now, boys. But
where'd you get one of them? What's coming of them?
Look, I don't know. There's a few lads supplying them down the country, but I don't know anything about it myself. But, do you know, it's not like, and I was talking to someone else, was watching the Tip and Cork match in a pub, and because, you know, they're all relying on the Wi-Fi, and it was lagging, and the game was lagging, and the match was falling behind. And, do you know, I suppose the whole frustration about it this weekend is that it was on a weekend when, okay, the provincial football finals went on, but we saw how bad them games were.
Yeah.
No game was closer than 11 or 12 points in it, you know. And I suppose it does come back to Sean Kavanagh made this point in the Sunday game, that there are too many games. And especially in football, earlier on in the year, and, you know, I thought it was, in fairness to Don Logue, it was very brave from him. Maybe it was silly from him, I don't know, but I definitely enjoyed watching him last night, because, you know, he went for broke. He's sitting in RT's studios and he's pointing up to the corner of the screen. He's like, we might as well put a rugby ball up here. And we sat in a meeting, Jackie and Declan McBennett was here. Do you know, he went for it. And I think a lot of hurling people were happy that, you know, that someone kind of stood up for it, because we're after missing two of the, could be the best games of the year already.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely. I think it always helps when someone speaks from the heart, and you can say, like, whatever you say about him and his opinions, he loves the sport, you know, and he has the sport's best interest at heart. And so all the hurling fans and potential hurling fans that you're losing out on, you know, would really appreciate that. I thought you made a very good point about the kids being outside and not knowing. And then if the parents aren't into the GAA, they're not going to maybe, you know, say that this game's on and we'll buy it for you. And or vice versa, like maybe, you know, they're in a situation where money's tight and then you've got your kids now pushing you, you know, like, oh, come on, it's only a tenner or whatever it is, £79 for the year, euro. That gets extra pressure now on parents, you know, to give them that, and, you know, they'd succumb to it. Like, it's just extra stuff that I don't think is needed. Donald did say one thing that I disagreed with. He said that pay-per-view, he has no problem with it. It's got its own, it's got a place in the landscape. I don't think it does. I don't think it does for the GAA. You know, like, this is our national game. It's unique to us in Ireland. RTE is the national broadcaster in the north. There's the BBC as well, and they look after Ulster. So, like, there's a responsibility there for our sport to be aired there, you know, and to make it terrestrial. And what's the TV license for then if they're not at least, you know, airing the games? And then the promotion around the games, as we've already touched on, like, we do more for promoting those games that are going to be played on GAA Go than RTE or GAA Go do themselves. Like, and we're not going to see a penny of the subscription fees unless you do.
And it's not, I don't think a dig at the GAA Go is what I'd certainly be doing, because the analysis and what they do is actually very good, and the lads that they have are refreshing, and it's totally different, and you get totally different insights. Like, they were in the changing room before the Cork game just talking about general stuff, that it was just bringing back memories of me, and people would obviously have no idea of the stuff that happens in around the dressing room, where lads sit and what they think of and what they're trying to do, and do they listen to music? Some don't, and so that's all interesting for people. So definitely not giving a dig at GAA Go. It's just, I think the GAA or whoever is in charge of all this promotion, or is there someone in charge? Like they talked about it last night. Is there someone in charge of the promotion of hurling, or is it just the promotion of the GAA? I've no idea. Like, where is this person?
Yeah, it doesn't seem that there is. Do you know whether it's a director of hurling or someone who's just directly in charge of promoting hurling? Because it is, and the same thing, in fairness, it applies to the football too, because coming down the line, Kerry, Mayo, Galway, Tyrone, two of the biggest matches on the opening weekend of the football championship, they're going to be behind, they're going to be on GAA Go as well. I think the whole problem is there's too many games going on in general. And, do you know, there's like RTE have, their thing is that they have 31 championship games exclusive for the year. And that's their thing. GAA Go have something like, I think it was 9 Liam McCarthy hurling games this year. But I suppose the question you'd probably ask is, like, why do RTE not have more games? Like, why on a weekend like this are they choosing the wrong ones? It's probably the frustration, I suppose, for hurling people.
Yeah, I know there's logistics and there's license fees, but why not open it up to TG Carr? Like, why not let them have a couple of games and maybe mix it with GAA Go? I don't know the answers, but I'm saying, like, last couple of weekends you're flicking around looking for something, and if you don't have GAA Go, you end up watching some soccer, or you watch a Formula One or whatever it is, because if you want to watch sport on a Saturday, and then you know there's games on, you're scrolling through Twitter trying to get results or online. I just think the whole thing is gone way beyond it, and it needs dramatic change, and it can change now. Like, it can change now, instead of waiting till the end of the season and talking about split season, talking about, like, we're just killing hurling and to a degree football. Like, the best football games probably won't be on. I know they showed the Connacht final and the Munster final, but, like, how many people were watching that after 10-15 minutes, and how many people seen the fixture and went, I'm not watching that.
You'd have known before the game, and it just always seems as if, you know, that these games, that there's always, like, the GAA, it's like they're limited. It's as everyone is limited to, or they are limited to this amount of games. And do you know, that was the way when it was Sky as well. It's just, there's all, like, we can only show 31 games. Like, why can they only show 31 games? And I'm not blaming RTE for that, but, like, it comes back to the GAA. Like, why is there only rights for that amount of games?
Yeah, I mean, well, when I worked at the BBC, I just know that there would have been, like, disputes about, because you're paying a TV license, so that's public money. The government, RTE and BBC, you know, they're publicly owned, so they have to be seen to be impartial and to distribute everything fairly. So that's their other sports, like the rugby and the soccer and everything else. So they're thinking there's only this much room for GAA, and then you got to split that in two. There's only this much room for hurling and football. So they're trying to, you know, cater to that, and that's the difficulties in their half. But there is definitely more room for it elsewhere. TG Cahar sometimes do the thing, like if it's not on TV, it's on YouTube, you know, and you can change it, or on the app you can go in and pick your game. I mean, to me that makes a little bit more sense, you know, if they're on at the same time anyway, especially, then we'd all have like a fair share at it. In terms of GAA Go, like, I mean, I would love GAA Go, especially if I thought that's where the home of hurling was going to be, or the home of the GAA would be, and they had the majority of the games, and I knew that all of the big things were there. And if they just had it all under one roof, one house, like, you'd be happy to pay your 70 odd euro, you know, for the year, knowing that it's all in one place. You're not going to be scrambling for the rest of the year trying to find the information, the documentaries, the panel shows and stuff, building up to it, knowing safely that the matches are on at this time, this day. And then you can start, like, yeah, there'll be teething issues, you know, with your grandparents' house setting it up to start with. But once it is started up, then it's fine. And it's not like next week, oh, it's on RT, next week it's on BBC, next week it's on TG Cahar on YouTube, and you have to set that all up.
Are the club games going to be on GAA Go as well?
See, that is an interesting point, because the club games at the minute, I think they're independent to the county boards. So, like, I know Tyrone have just hired, like, you know, freelancers and things like that. And
club or in Stream Sport, we're kind of taking over them this year.
Yeah, yeah, I think they sort of look after it in their own. But that would be interesting if they took
that's
that
what
over.
I thought it was going to be, that's what I paid the 70 quid. I was like, sure, I'll get club games out of this for the rest of the year. No,
should have got the box like now.
So. Moving on. But I suppose the last thing is, like, why, like, as Conal said, just TG Cahar is there. They do a great job showing all the National League games. Like, Virgin Media is there, another Irish channel. Mm-hmm. Like, why do they not have these? Why do they not have the rights? Like, why is the GAA restricting it to just RT and GAA Go?
Yeah,
I mean, that's the problem.
I don't know. Like, it seems like an open goal, doesn't it? I mean, more games means more promotion. More promotion means more eyes on the sport. The more eyes on the sport, the more popular sport is, the more viewers you'll have for your channel. So it looks like an open goal, does it? But maybe someone in the know can explain.
Yeah, but who's going to explain? Like, I mean, does these the questions that have to be answered, like, by somebody in Croke Park, instead of Croke Park saying nothing?
Yeah.
Like, going back to the hurling thing, like, they do a lot to promote hurling in the weaker counties by sending, say, big coaches to the weaker counties. But, like, that's tiny stuff. Like, that's like the 5%. We're talking about the 95%. Get it in everyone's house is the start of it, and keep it there, and then do all the promotions after. Like, I'd just love to hear what their thoughts are on it, because they obviously have some thought. This didn't just happen in the last couple of weeks. So somebody has made a decision somewhere to limit the amount of hurling games. So why? I'd just love to know.
Yeah, I think we all would, in fairness. We won't solve it today, but just on Don Logan, I have to say I loved his microwaved hurling championship. It's not something I agree with now, but it was one he put a lot of thought into, I have to say. And himself and Jackie, they were good entertainment value as well. It was very funny when they were talking about the, not a funny subject, obviously, the head hits. And Jackie was like, I'd love to have gone up to you and given you a head hit. And Don Logue just gives him the little nod, like, you know, this guy, you know, get a load of this guy.
He wouldn't have got by the rock, I'd say, to get in at him.
that's the trouble.
He was well protected his whole life.
That's it, 100%. He mightn't have the rock protect him now when Declan McBennett comes after him. But look, we'll leave that. We'll leave that one behind. We spent. I'd say we probably spent enough time on it, have we, lads?
Oh yeah. I mean, I have not more to say on it.
Yeah. We'll move on to Dublin and their win over Wexford. And I suppose the move to Croke Park is probably one that's kind of crept under the radar a small bit, Conal, because they played Westmead in Parnell Park, and they have Galway coming up now in Croke Park. So they're playing kind of their two biggest home games. They're playing them in Croke Park. I know when you were playing, like, Parnell Park was this kind of this fortress, and like did you love playing in Parnell Park?
I think any Dublin player loves playing in Parnell Park. There's no question about that. You're trying to say, did it suit the team that I was on more to play in a smaller pitch than to go to Croke Park? Look, I don't know, probably did. If I was in the team now, I'd still advocate to bring Galway to Parnell Park. You just can't beat the atmosphere that happened in whenever it was 2019. bring a team that are so-called, the people would perceive to be better than you, into Parnell Park. Make it as difficult as possible for them in there. You're going to have a full house of whatever, 10, 12,000 people screaming at them, and really get under their skin. And we tried that before, and many's a time you tried it, and it's successful. But this team reckon that getting to Croke Park is equally as good, and I can't disagree with that either. Like, we used to love getting to Croke Park too, but there's certain times, certain players might suit it, but this team probably like playing at Croke Park. They've played there a lot of times, and look, at the end of the day, if you're going to win a Leinster final, if you're going to win it, it's Croke Park is where you're going to do it. So I can see Micheál Donoghue's point, and the players, I'd say, were 100% behind. Let's get it to Croke Park. The more games you have in Croke Park, the better. Everyone wants to play in Croke Park, but it's not to say that they wouldn't say no or be dead against if it happened to be in Parnell Park. Like, everyone would love that, as in a Dublin player going to Parnell Park, because I don't know any county team likes going to Parnell Park where it's jam-packed with all Dublin supporters and you're in a real battle against us. So, but look, it was the right decision, and bringing Galway to Croke Park, they beat Galway there, what was it, 2 years ago as well, in Croke Park. So Dublin doesn't, I don't think it matters to this Dublin team where they play, and any chance you can play in Croke Park as a young lad in your career, you'll always take it. Like, many times over the years that the Dublin hurlers play before the footballers, even though the stadium, there mightn't have been like 4,000, 5,000 people in it. Like, it's a horrible atmosphere, but it's still nice to play in Croke Park.
What was it about Parnell Park that your team loved?
We actually didn't play that many championship games there, really. Only near the end near the end of my career I did, but I'm not sure. I just don't think, you know the ground so well, you know everything, and you just know the fact that teams don't and players don't like coming to Parnell, and the fact that the crowd are probably really on top of the pitch and tight, it all adds to it. So if you can get any little advantage, you're going to take it, and I always love bringing teams to Parnell and see if they're up for the fight, you know, because you can visibly see lads that are just not up for it and don't like that kind of confrontation in or around the middle and stuff. And I used to love it, and I used to try to thrive on that. But look, this team is totally a little bit different. They're probably a lot more athletic maybe than maybe we were as a team, even though certain lads were. But we used to love the battle, and bringing it to a pitch in Parnell would be ideal. But this team liked to spray the ball around and play the short passing game out of defence and try and give in a long ball. So that's definitely suited for Croke Park, you know.
Yeah, John Milan, he said that of all the grounds, he hated Parnell Park. Whether it was walking in and there's barbed wire kind of knocked around over the stiles on the way in, and it's kind of in the middle of a housing estate and there's kind of grey walls. It's just kind of, as you said, there's no kind of a hiding place there really. And I'd say from an opposing team walking in, it is kind of, you just get a hostile vibe to it the second
you go into Walsh Park and it's worse. Like, it's a nightmare going down there. You're trying to find the place in the bus, and nearly, I think, always got lost. And it's always freezing cold when we're down there. The pitch was always brutal. But anyway, I'm not getting into that. that's what you wanted. You don't want lads that are comfortable coming into your home patch trying to get one over on, you know. Barbed wire on top of the turnstiles. I don't know. Maybe there is. I've never really seen it. I've been there loads of times, but been there so many times I don't even see that kind of stuff. But the atmosphere any time in Parnell when Dublin hurling or football are playing there, it's what you want in your home ground. You go up to Tyrone, they'll do the exact same thing. They'll put you maybe in every, not just Tyrone, they'll put you in the worst so-called dressing room further away. You're going to get out second. You're not going to get what you want. You mightn't even get an area that you want to warm up in. And everything is just to disrupt the other team. So I don't think Dublin are any different than that.
No. I think they're doing up Walsh Park, so maybe they're going to improve that this year. Waterford are playing their home games in Semple Stadium this year, actually. But like last week, the talk was about Croke Park with the football, and Glenn Ryan was giving out that, you know, the Leinster semi-final was on in Croke Park and that it should be, you know, in a so-called neutral ground, is what he said. Lee, I suppose it's the same, like, kind of a topic. What do you think is the I know, like, the like should Dublin hurlers say be allowed to just say Croke Park is our home ground, like we have Parnell Park as well, or what is your opinion on that?
See, I think it goes under the radar a little bit, just more because Dublin hurling team doesn't have the same maybe pull that the Dublin footballers do currently in this time. You know, you look at Leinster football at the minute and the way Dublin have dominated the last 13 years, you know, and the advantage that Croke Park may have lent to that in the slightest regard, because obviously they've had some unbelievable teams, and then other teams in Leinster have, you know, let themselves slip. So there's a whole combination of things. But no, Croke Park's definitely an advantage, and it's a lot of power to say, yeah, we'll play in the, you know, in the Sports National Stadium because we want to play there, you know, and that's a lot of pull to have. I would say, like, just for the general atmosphere and the enjoyment of the game, you know, in that match itself, you know, against Wexford, I think the game was tied like 74th minute or something. Imagine that, you know, the atmosphere in Parnell Park would have been palpable, you know, and then it was Donald Burke hit the two frees, I think. But in Croke Park with the 9,000 only there, I think it was, you know, it's a bit cold, a bit corporate, you know, it loses that edge just a little bit. Maybe not if you're a Dublin fan watching it on the edge of your seat, but from a neutral point of view, when you're just trying to enjoy the game and get sucked into the storyline and the narrative and everything, the atmosphere definitely helps. You know, I thought Parnell Park, for the sake of better sport, you know, for neutrals and a better platform, it would have suited better.
But I don't think it's the Dublin GAA asking to play in Croke Park, be it league or championship, whatever. Is it not Croke Park saying Croke Park is available if you guys want to play here, because they know they're going to cash in on it? And if Dublin say yes, well, like, if they ask Kildare would probably say yes, or they asked Kilkenny would probably say yes. I don't think it's the Dublin County Board going, we want to play it in Croke Park, or the players saying it. Players will play wherever, and a lot of the players, I'd say Dublin footballers, would love a game in Parnell Park where it'd be absolutely rammed. They'd thrive in that atmosphere too. And Jesus, a long time ago when I was playing football, we used to love going on the road. Like, I mean, going down to Longford, playing the Longford Championship, where it was absolutely the exact same situation, as hostile as you can get in Longford, and that's what you want. I'm not sure if I'm picking this up all wrong, but I don't think it's the Dublin County Board demanding to play in Croke Park. I think it's the other way around, where Croke Park or the Leinster Council say, lads, this is going to be a big game here. I think we're going to cash in here. So we'll ask them, do they want to play? Of course, the county board will ask the management and the players, do you want to play? And then they go, yeah, obviously we do. So
will the onus then be on Dublin players at some stage down the line of a team that'll just decide, actually, we think Parnell will suit better maybe for the game?
Same as the hurlers. I think many a time when we under Anthony Daly, word will come back and say, listen, we have a chance to play in Croke Park against whoever it is in a league game or whatever it is. Do you want to play or not? Like, in 9 out of 10, you'd say, yes, of course we want to play in Croke Park. It's the exact same thing, I'm presuming, with John Costello and Desi, like, except for it's just constantly, yes, we'll play there, yes, we'll play there. Because why wouldn't you want to play there? Like, if you ask Leitrim, if you ask Cork or whoever it is, of course they're going to take the option to play in Croke Park. So I don't think Dublin are demanding anything.
Yeah.
It's the Leinster Council saying, here, lads, there's a game in Croke Park, would you want to play there? And that's where the money is being made, obviously, because they know Dublin have a huge fan base, so they're going to make money on it.
So you think when Glenn Ryan's coming out with these statements and stuff, he's going after maybe the wrong people or going the wrong angle down it? He should, you know, challenging the Leinster board to nearly take that choice even away from Dublin, stop presenting it as an option, if that's what Glenn Ryan's issue is, you know?
There was a lot of stuff that Glenn Ryan had issues with. Like, I think, some of it was valid. Some of it is valid, and some of it is not valid. Like, so, like, coming out with that at that time is probably not the right time to do it. You know, right after you're beaten, it does sound like a little bit of sour grapes. Whether it is or not, I'm not sure. But, you know, maybe he did it for a reason. They're going to play again, and they're probably not going to play in Croke Park as a neutral venue. So they might go to whatever, Tullamore or Portlaoise. And you know, I think Dublin would like to go down there. No problem. Like, absolutely no problem. They play in Ockham. I don't care. I don't care where they play, I presume, to play anyone. So this myth that I think Dublin have a massive advantage in Cobra, of course they do. But it's not the county board demanding, I think, to play there. It's they're being asked, they're being facilitated. If you want to, you can play there. So, and there's a good reason behind that.
There must be some reason that Micheál Donoghue must have thought this year, like, that the Croke Park suits us better than Parnell Park, and that was the reason. Like, what do you think it is that is the suits this team? Like, from watching it now, just as a neutral, I thought this was a good game of hurling, and I think the narrative was that this was they were going on at half time, like, neither team have got going, and this game hasn't been much good. But I just think it was because the atmosphere was so bad.
I don't think the game itself was of the highest quality. Like, especially if you watch that game and then you watch the Tipperary Cork game, there is a bit of a difference now. Not saying that the quality of players are different, but I'm just saying just maybe the atmosphere led to it, where it just didn't get up to that high tempo. But it did a little bit improved in the second half. Why did the Micheál Donnelly want to play there? Because he feels that his team are better equipped to Croke Park, and if they want to go on and win the Leinster title, they're going to have to play in Croke Park. So let's go and play in Croke Park. We're not afraid to play Wexford anywhere or play Galway anywhere. So it doesn't matter. The way they play at the minute is obviously playing the ball out of defence. So that suits a wider pitch. Parnell Park is a little bit smaller. So they obviously feel that they can play the ball around a little bit in defence and give the ball up and give lads a bit more room up front to try and win that ball. And look, he's proved right by winning against Wexford, and we'll see what happens the next day against Galway.
Yeah, so Dublin are obviously missing a good few players this year. Keane O'Callaghan, Chris Cromie, Ryan McBride, to name just a few. There's obviously a good few new faces kind of stepping up to fill that void. Paddy Doyle was very impressive. Hadn't seen much of him before. He was wing back the other day, stepped up. Chris O'Leary, who is a Cork man who's transferred up, he was very good. Conor Donoghue has stepped up this year, definitely. And Mark Rogan is another. So, like, do you think, they're going to miss Chris Cromie, they're going to miss Keane O'Callaghan, but do you think these players, they're stepping up, they'll be able to bring Dublin far enough that, you know, they'll be able to challenge Galway when they have them in 2 weeks' time?
Of course they'll be able to challenge Galway. Look, it's a lot of those lads, some of them lads are probably getting exposed to this level of hurling that they haven't been playing before, or and they probably mightn't have got this chance if the Keane O'Callaghans or the Chris Crummies and everybody was there. So now they're getting their chance, and they've done relatively well against Westmeath, they've done relatively well against Antrim, and they did even better against Wexford. So it probably suits, I say, for the management team that the fixtures that they had, that each game they're playing is probably progressing a little bit higher the level, and they're doing really well at the minute. There's another step to come against Galway, that the intensity will probably raise a little bit more. And look, you can't argue, these lads have been kind of a little bit thrown in the deep end, but there's a lot of experienced lads still around them, you know, to help them along and guide them, and you can't fault them at the minute. And to say that they won't be able to challenge Galway, I think they'll definitely challenge Galway. They'll relish the chance of getting at Galway. I don't think Dublin ever fear playing Galway, and getting them to Croke Park, it's the perfect opportunity to show again what Dublin have. And I don't think they were particularly impressive against Wexford, and I think they probably know that themselves. A lot of stop start, a lot of freeze, sometimes possession, we were giving it away loosely. I think we need to probably think of a few other ideas than hitting Danny all the time on puckouts. But look, it worked. You do what you can, and it worked for the weekend that was in it. And I'm sure Micheál has a lot more up his sleeve going forward, because they're going to need it.
Did you play with Donal Burke in the latter stage of your career? Yeah. He's hurling some stuff the last while, and a very unique player is probably the thing about him. He can just shoot from anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, to see him with the freeze is, even though he wasn't overly impressive up in against Antrim on the freeze, he hit and miss, but he still kept at it. He's very strong minded in that way. And if you watch him in any of the club games, you know, he takes responsibility all the time. He'll always want the ball. He's always looking for it. And when he gets a chance, you've seen in the weekend, like, that's the normal stuff that you'd nearly see in training, or you'd see in Dublin Championship games or league games. Like, he just slings it over from anywhere. He shoots from anywhere. And like, anyone else gets the ball in those positions, you're saying, don't shoot, pass it, get it into a scorer. And you'd be like, Donald, you just do what you want to do there, because 9 times out of 10, he'll get it, you know. A little bit like maybe like the Paul Ryman we used to be on the Dublin team. Like, he'd get the ball and go into the corner and shoot. It would probably go over, and you can't say anything to these lads, because they're just so gifted that they know where the goals are. But Donal is a special player, and it's just great to have a solid free taker, you know, that when the game is a point or two up, you know, if you get a free, and it looks like you can get a free from nearly anywhere inside your own half back line, that Donald could come back and you can say, well, that's a score, you know. And I know people were giving out about the free that Danny won. Was it a free? Was it not? Did he throw himself on the ground? But that's probably the same spot as Joe Canning had in the All Ireland there a couple of years.
David Glennon was found,
yeah,
there, wasn't he?
Yeah, it's the same spot. And everyone was saying, oh, like, what a pressure free it is, whatever. Like, Donald just stood up and stuck straight over. Not a bother to him, like, and he didn't even think about it. Maybe that was the atmosphere, maybe you could add to it, but then he goes and sticks one even further over. So, phenomenal stuff. Great that he's on such a great bit of form at the minute. But on the other side of it, Dublin need more from their forwards to step up and score. You know, they need, Donald won't be able to keep doing this all the time himself. So they need more from the lads inside, and just to get on the score sheet, because that one man isn't gonna you know, be able to do it every single day. Although Donald does it fairly regularly, but it's probably now a little bit more responsibility on the other guys now to really step up and get a few scores.
Did you realise when he came in at the very start that this lad had something special about him?
Yeah, look, I obviously very aware of him when he was playing with Nafina. You know, you're always trying to pin him down and try and mark him. But if you watch his position, and he doesn't really have a position. You know, it's like as if he's told just do what you want to do to a degree, like, you know, because he can pop up anywhere. And 9 times out of 10, he's at the back of a ruck or he's at the side of a ruck getting a hand pass, and he's just. Putting the slingshot and it goes straight over, you know. So he's excellent. His touch is excellent. His striking is unbelievable. And he has a great attitude for a young lad that constantly gets big scores. You know, he doesn't have any kind of an ego whatsoever. You know, he just gets on with it and works really hard. And that's exactly what you want. And he's a great lad to have around for all. Like, he's only one of those kind of younger lads coming through. And what a leader he is in the team at the minute.
Yeah, and apparently he's always practicing his frees, whether it's on lunchtime in at Movie Road in Nafina. And it goes to show the importance of a good free kicker, Lee, because Wexford, I think for years they've kind of had an issue, whether it's Lee Chin hitting frees, Roy O'Connor hitting frees, Conor McDonald, the kind of flick between the frees. And for finish, that was the difference between the two teams the weekend, is Wexford. It's an unbelievable stat from Christy O'Connor in the Irish Examiner that they had 19 more shots than Dublin. And, you know, to lose by 2 points. Yeah. And Dublin were economical because the forwards, you know, took on the right shots. But Wexford were hitting some crazy, crazy shots down the stretch in that game.
No, I mean, they talk about, you know, letting the game go in 19 ways. It's racking up serious scores. I mean, they argue too that there's people trying to step up and take responsibility there, you know, and take the game to Dublin. But they just weren't as clinical, as you say, or as economical. A free taker is so, so important, and it goes with, in Gaelic football too. I'm going to be lazy and use that as a reference point, but I always thought a big part of Derry's resurgence in Gaelic football was getting Shane McGuigan on the ball and just getting the frees, because if you can get someone where you're fouled anywhere on the pitch and then it suddenly becomes a scoreable free, and you're getting 4, 5, 6, sometimes 8, you know, extra points on the board because of that, and it just makes all the difference in the world. You know, how many times does Cork, you know, benefit from like Patrick Horgan and his unbelievable ability to take frees from just everywhere? He's like dead eye, you know, dead behind the eyes when it comes to like the emotion and the atmosphere. None of it seems to affect him. It's a game changer to have a player of that ability, and it's something that Dublin, yeah, will benefit from, definitely.
I was wary about landing you with a hurling question there, Lee, but in fairness, you moulded it fairly well to turn it into a football one.
Banished from Tyrone.
Fair play to you. But
on that Wexford, it was disappointing though, like, if you're watching it as a Wexford fan, to see them hit so many wides and the same kind of wides, you know, like, surely, you know, in the coaching setup or management team, you talk about, right, there's times in the game when we need scores. So if you're after hitting a bad wide, you know, and you're after hitting a bad wide, you know, and everyone knows that the next score is vital, and it's not a time to hit one over the shoulder or take one from the sideline. You know you need to get it into that area where you're nearly 90% where you're going to get the score. And Wexford just kept doing the same things. I know it's a point to say everyone wants to step up and land that one that settles everyone down, but it's how you do that. You know, if you look at any of the top teams, be it any sport, basketball or let's say whatever, the footballers, Kerry footballers or the Dublin footballers, if there's a wide or there's a drop short, it'll never happen two or three times. You know, you'll always get in around that D, get in there or win an easy free to get that score. You know, Wexford was worrying for Wexford, if you like to say that. You know, they kept hitting wise, and it seemed to be, oh, that's grand, sure, we'll have another shot. Oh, that's fine too. Like, we'll just keep shooting. Yes, keep shooting, but where are you shooting from and who's shooting? You know, you need to be very clear on that. And I'm sure they've spoke about it, whether it just went out of their heads at the time. But I think every team is very aware of, if you hit two or three wides in a row, it's like the next one cannot go wide. Or let's get an easy free here, or win an easy free and make sure we get it. And not a free out around the middle. And if it's out around the middle, you lead the ball in. And, you know, so little things like that. But, and that would have brought them into the game, massive amount of wides. Like, and that kills the confidence of any team that are trying to get back. They were coming back, and then Dublin were just edging out a little bit, two or three points, maybe 4 points, and then they were getting back again and then hitting a couple of wides, and it just kills the team's momentum, you know.
It was like they completely ran out of ideas that for a finish they were just like, get the ball and I'm going to shoot if I can get any space whatsoever.
It's per game management then, isn't it? So what, like, does Wexford just need a leader then to stand up in that situation, but the lads, you know, calm it down?
Well, they have them, in fairness, and one thing I could not believe was how Conor McDonald, you'd have played against him a lot, Conal, in your time. I just couldn't believe how they didn't start him on Sunday, because he's one of these players that I think if Wexford are to be going well, they need Conor McDonald to be going well. And like, I know maybe he hasn't been scoring too much recently. Look, he was decent against Galway. He came on and got 2 points, but he always wins the ball and he'll compete for it.
Yeah, and like, if he's playing or he comes on or whatever, like, he's a threat. So you need to, you're very aware of these lads. So you do your homework before. And if Conor McDonald is corner forward, he's not being our full forward, whatever, you're not going to leave him on his own. So he's going to be occupying someone while, or if someone else is there, you're kind of like, well, you know, I'm not sure about him. But you'll always earmark 4 or 5 lads to say, these lads are always going to be marked and keep tight to them. So if nothing else, you know, he would occupy a good Dublin defender to keep him kind of quiet. But look, it's good for Dublin that he didn't start. And look, if he was brought on earlier, he might have got a few more scores. But look, he's definitely a threat. And in any high ball into him, as you've seen, he's well able to win the ball and score. Like, so from a Dublin point of view, it was great. But like, from a Wexford point of view, maybe he's off form, maybe he was acquiring an injury, I don't know. But they certainly need their best players on the field. And they are struggling with injuries and whatever at the minute. But they seem to be a different team than they were last year or the year before. That bit of jazz or a bit of pep in their step is not there at the minute.
Yeah, I'm sure Owen O'Donnell was delighted when he seen Conor McDonald wasn't there to come into him anyway. But we were talking about free takers there, and on the Tip and Cork game, as a Tipperary man, I have to say that my heart was in my mouth when Declan Dalton stood over that free. I know it was, he was only, what, 30, he was 35 yards out from his own goals. I know he stole a few yards as well. But it was a thrilling end. It was a heart-stopping game. I think Tipperary have it. What, Cork come back? But it was a thrilling end, really, to what was a thrilling game, Conor.
Yeah, unbelievable, exciting game, and probably exactly what you nearly expected, Munster. Tipperary doing everything really well. Probably a little bit disappointed that they didn't hang on. I think they were maybe 5 points up at 5 minutes to go. And in any game, you'd like to think you'd see that out. But Cork seemed to find a way. And the goals that Cork were getting, they just got goals at the right times. And look, I'm sure Tipperary will be disappointed in defensively how they were, because they were just cut open numerous times. At the weekend. And look, fair play to Cork. We've been saying it for a long time with Cork. Like, if they get a running game on you, it's very hard to stop. It's very hard to stop these lads of pace coming through. And we've seen it at the weekend. And I don't know, did Tipperary struggle when they're opened up and a bit of pace going down the middle? Obviously they do, because they leaked, whatever, 3 goals against Clare and 4 goals in the weekend. So that's something that they need to look at. But they're still there. They still have the quality forwards to get the scores. And they, you know, they had their chances. Probably Shamie Callan, another day, if he was a little bit sharper, maybe he would have buried that. The game would have been over, even though he did excellent to keep the frame of mind after getting blocked down like that, to run after the ball and to take the responsibility to have the shot, you know. It just shows his importance to that team. And losing Jason Ford obviously is a massive blow again, but they dealt with that. So look, there's a lot of positives for Tipperary, and also for Cork. I suppose they have to be happy with their performance, and their never say die attitude, and the fact that they can get goals when they seem to nearly want them to get goals, and they kept playing till the very end. And great game, a lot more exciting game than it was in the Leinster game, that's for sure. And you couldn't take your eye off it. And look, it's great score. It's great just to see all the scores happening, you know, and compare them to a football game. It's light years. There's no difference. There's no comparison between the hurling and the football when you're trying to watch them, you know. And look, I just hope that we it keeps going. And the refereeing has been excellent. I mean, yes, you probably in a lot of other games they would have been blown up, or a lot of over the years blown up for frees. But let the game flow, let it off, and this is what you get. You know, you give a blow, as we used to always hear, you give a blow, you take a blow, you get on with it. You know, and that's the attitude that it is at the minute, and it's great to see that. And I think they have to be commended on the refereeing, because it's not an easy job to referee. And yes, they might get a call here and there that's not right, but in general, it's only good for the game to let it flow and let the lads get on with it.
Yeah, well, that was the talk, Lee, on the Sunday game, that the referee got it wrong about the Ronan Maher one, that he should have been sent off, and the head high tackle was kind of, it was, you know, it's been a topic of discussion, I suppose, over the last few weeks. There was a Seamus Flanagan one, there was a shocking one on Mikey Boyle on Killian Kiley in the Joe McDonagh Cup yesterday. I kind of knew Ronan Maher when he did that. I kind of knew he wasn't going to get sent off, but Jackie Turley and Don Logue were Jackie, in fairness, he said himself, he admitted that he'd given a few of them hits in his own time, in his own career. I remember him sickening in Seamus Callan with one, I think it was in 2011. But they're saying now that, you know, if you should err on the side of a red card rather than err on the other side of it. So,
yeah, I mean, he made the point too that strength and conditioning has evolved so much in the GAA, that these guys are so much stronger and bigger and physically more powerful, and they generate, his terms was that you generate so much more G-force and you are just going to be a lot more dangerous. So, you know, they have to be more in control of what they can do now. I think one of the points he was making was sort of just like, I seen on Twitter actually, because I was trying to find different arguments around this and discussions and see who sort of weighed in. But I'd seen a lot of things on Twitter that, you know, if you can't take a hit, then you shouldn't be in the game. And the strength and conditioning side of things is that, like, yeah, you should get bigger and stronger then to take these blows, and then the game will evolve and you'll survive that way. But you can't train your brain to take shots, you know. I mean, your head's your head.
Like, when you don't see it coming,
exactly, and it's the blind shot. You know, they always say in boxing, you know, it's the shot that you don't see is the one that hurts you, because, you know, you're not tensing at all, you're not preparing or you've equipped your body, you know, to take a blow here. It's just caught you cold, and they're definitely the most dangerous one. So it is an interesting conversation now, because it's, you know, you're opening a can of worms in terms of trying to change legislation around it. But I think it was Donald was saying that, you know, we err more on the side of a red card rather than, well, a yellow card to play it safe.
Yeah, like, do you think that was a red card for Ronan Maher, Conal?
I think if you see it on from the camera angle that we've seen it on the Sunday game, yes. But I think if you think about it, where the referee was, and that the fact there was a Tipperary player in front of Maher when he was going to... Mm-hmm. Yes, Maher was expecting maybe the Cork lad to come around the other side of him and hit him. And he probably didn't... He wasn't really thinking if it was going to be shoulder or shoulder or not. But where the referee was, it probably was hard to see it. Should you err on the side of a red card to protect the game and protect players themselves? I'm not sure. Probably, but
depends,
I think...
Depends on individual kind of situations, I suppose.
Yeah, it does. And then, but the only issue is you go again with the referee and you leave it up to the referee. Some referees will say, oh, Jesus, he was just late and I'll give him a yellow. Some other referees will say, oh, that's a straight red. So there's a grey area there. So it just needs to be decided if there's any head contact with an elbow or a shoulder or whatever, it's a card, of what colour card it is, and that's it. And I guarantee you, as the lads probably said, that after a couple of weeks, players will adjust. You'll either not do that hit, or you make sure your hit is lower or whatever it is. Because players know, you kind of know if you're going in for a challenge, you know, I might get this lad like higher, oh, yeah, I might, and that's fine with me, I don't mind, like, but I'll get him anyway. But you'll also think then, if you're going to get a red for it, you know, that split second you say, well, I might just pull off, or I might just kind of hold them up a little bit or whatever. So players will adjust very, very quickly. I think if they came out with a rule and just said, that's it, right? If there's any contact to the head, sorry, but it's a red card for that's it. And then everyone would be happy, rather than a grey area, because there's enough grey areas, and leaving it up to the referee to decide. The referee has enough to be doing whatever else than the way the game has been. So much pace in the game, so it's either one thing or another. Like, leave it as is, and it's up. Leave it. It's all kind of wishy washy. Or come out and say, it's a red card for that. And that's, everyone's happy and everyone will understand it, because managers and coaches will coach that and they'll understand it, and they can't argue then when it happens. You know?
Yeah, it's black and white sort of. Yeah. And that's kind of the point that I think they argued that as well. You know, he was saying there's very little accidents at this level of the game, and that's kind of what you were saying. You know, you kind of know, you know, that you can...
bar a pull, like if you pull on something, like if the ball is there and some, you know, you pull on someone and hit them head, that's... like that's the same. That's acted as a red card. Like, so it's the same. You know, if you, like Flanagan that time when he hit Stephen Bennett. Like, I put money on that he knew what he was doing. Like, okay. You know, you can argue that, and you can go to the disciplinary committee and say, "Oh, I didn't realize, and I was up higher, and blah blah blah." But you know, like, you're what you're doing at that point.
Has it ever happened to you that, you know, it happens? Because that's what the boys are saying, that there's never an accident. Like, has it ever happened to you that you hit someone and it actually is an accident? You're going in to maybe hit them on the shoulder.
Anytime I hit someone, it's an accident. I never mean to hit anyone.
Well, of course, you said that.
And you don't have a dodgy box.
Look, that's all from the hurling. Obviously, the Kilkenny Antrim game. Kilkenny were beating them by a lot early on. And Antrim, in fairness to them, they hung in there. But the game was over early on. Galway gave Westmead a bit of a clip. And the Joe McDonagh is a competition that is going right down to the wire, to the final round. The only unfortunate thing is that Offaly are already through, because if they weren't, then next weekend would be an absolutely blockbuster weekend, because you have Offaly against Carlow, who are currently in second, and Laois against Kerry. So Laois and Kerry, they'll be hoping to win that game, but they'll know that Carlow could be Offaly, and that'll be them gone as well. But it has been a very exciting competition. Offaly have been the form team so far in it, and look, from there we'll go on to the football. And I suppose Kerry versus Clare, the only place to start really is with the Cliffords. And you know, you have to, like, just tremendous role models is what comes to mind when you think of David and Paddy Clifford. Like, it was like such a terrible situation for them to have been in, for their mother to have passed away the day before the game. Like, you're only thinking about, like, how difficult that is for them. The lads, like, they could probably hardly sleep the night before, and so many things, a funeral coming up, all these things in your mind. So just extremely difficult situation for them. And look, I think the credit has to be given to the GA. It was too late to maybe call off the game, for them. But I think everything that the GA that they could do, they did do. Like, when they were naming out in the teams over the PA, they called out Paddy Clifford, and they gave a little pause, and the crowd in the Gaelic grounds gave him a big round of applause. The same with David. Do you know, the Clare players and Colm Collins were straight into David Clifford, offering the sympathies after the game. Jerome Henry, the referee, gave David the match ball after the match, you know, which was just a nice touch. And I suppose all the Kerry players were interviewed. Sean O'Shea did the interview for David after the match. And, you know, he just talked about what brilliant football people that the Cliffords and the O'Shea family are. And I suppose that was the one thing that struck me when I got the chance to interview David there 2 weeks ago, was, you know, people were talking about him last year as if, you know, he had too much going on, and between Fossa and Kerry, that, you know, this guy must be sick of football. And he just said to me that, like, even when he got the break, he was still going to club games in Kerry. And, you know, that's just the people that they are, and football is their life. So that's why they played, kind of.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, outstanding from the two guys. And it's probably the same in a lot of counties around the country. You know, when things go wrong, the GA rallies around everyone. And I'm not sure, but I think I heard that the guys actually wanted to play. Their family wanted to play in memory of their mother. And, you know, and look, it's difficult, a championship game at the best of times, and then for this circumstance to happen, it's incredible, the performance that the two lads put in over the weekend. And absolutely full credit to them, and full credit to for Jack O'Connor and how he handled it, and the whole squad there, and the GA. And look, it's a tough time for them at the moment, but I suppose football and GA, you know, slightly kind of help a little bit, maybe if it can. But look, two outstanding individuals on the field and off the field, from what I'm hearing. Yeah,
well, that was what Jack O'Connor said, that, you know, it might have provided the lads a bit of solace, that, you know, they were able to, I suppose, just focus on that game for that hour that they had. And just going back to, it was a Chrissy O'Connor piece again. It was a kind of a lovely image to end the day. He said the cameras were showing Paddy when he was walking off the field, kind of through the crowd that was on the field. And he caught up with David. David was going down through the tunnel at this age, and, you know, put his arm around him as they walked down the tunnel. And, you know, just the two lads that they were kind of in it together. And, you know, whether it was Sean O'Shea's interview, Jack O'Connor giving David a hug when he came down from the... It was just... everyone kind of stood with them on that day.
No, absolutely, yeah. Kerry did a very good job of protecting the two lads as well. You already mentioned Sean O'Shea accepted the Man of the Match award, so he wouldn't have to do the interview. Mickey Quirk and other stewards and stuff were straight on trying to help David get off the pitch, because he's always swarmed with kids, you know, looking at autographs and all. And, you know, a lot of them don't know better, although some of them definitely should have. There's people there too old asking for autographs and photos on that day in particular. And then when it got to the stage that he was going to go up and he was going to lift the cup, I was covering the game and I was dreading his speech. They didn't say beforehand that he wasn't going to make a speech, and I was kind of like, because he's going to have to like pay tribute to, you know, his mother, and, you know, I'm going to have to write about it, and I just sort of want to leave him alone, you know. I was just delighted then when he lifted the trophy and he didn't have to make a speech and he could just walk off, and he was met by Jack O'Connor, who embraced him. And that was just a really lovely moment, you know, because in those moments, yeah, obviously we had to write about the game, you had to contextualise the situation and everything that happened, but you didn't have like his thoughts and his own words on what happened, you know. That's personal to him, personal to his family. So I thought Kerry did really well in protecting him and Paddy in that situation. And then in the football side of things, unbelievable. Like, I think he's 2-7 he got in the end, 2-6. And then that goal that Paddy Clifford set up for him, you know, it was always going to happen, wasn't it? One being the provider and the other the scorer. And then Paddy got a goal himself. The two men were just incredible.
Yeah, I suppose on the game itself, like it was, you know, it was over by the time 15 minutes into it. The same with the Connacht final, really. I'm just wondering, like, kind of like as a dual player, like would you find it as easy to watch a football game now as you would a game of hurling?
No, it's a lot easier to watch a hurling game, that's for sure. Like I was saying to you earlier on, I went to the Dublin and Kildare game there a couple of weeks ago in Croke Park. I haven't been to a Dublin game in a long time, and bar 10-15 minutes, like it was boring, you know. I had my young one there, she wasn't really interested, she's big into it, but she wasn't really interested in it, like, because nothing happens for so long, you know. It's a bit like rugby, you know, nothing can happen for so long, and then something obviously sparks it and they get a few scores or whatever. Like, it was interesting maybe just to see how Dublin set up and how Kildare set up, and, you know, sometimes a lot of talk, oh look, there's no one in the half of the field, only with the keeper. And but, like, that's not exciting, you know. That's, you don't pay 60 quid to go and see that, you know. I wouldn't be rushing back to watch another football championship game unless it's later on in the season where two big teams are going at it, you know. Well, then you go and watch a hurling game. And no, sorry, on the other side of that, I was in earlier and we seen the Louth and Offaly, and okay, maybe people are going to argue the quality wasn't as high, but it was definitely exciting because teams were going at it. You know, there wasn't a huge, massive mass defence and one team attack and then the other team attack, and it was all really slow. The two teams were going at it, and that was exciting in extra time, and that was good to watch. But in general, a lot of the football is tough to watch in comparison to the hurling. Like, there's just so many scores in hurling all the time. I think that's what makes it more exciting. Like, you certainly couldn't watch a hurling game and then go, like, if it on let's say on RT or whoever has it, the first game, if the first game is a hurling game and then go and watch a football game, it's a complete nightmare, like, trying to do that. You know, if you're watching it happen to struggle through a football game and you watch a hurling game, at least that keeps you really interested in the second game. But but look, people can get enjoyment in, I suppose, different ways. I like to see scores. I like to see individual things happen that are exciting. Some people get pleasure out of watching defensive and how defensive teams are and how teams set up and everything like that. You know, as a supporter, I just like to see the game play well, and I like to see more kicking in football than there is. It's an unbelievable amount of hand passing, and I like to see ball being kicked out and being contested around the middle. It doesn't happen a whole lot. Maybe I'm old school, but I'd like to just see the game play at a little bit more pace and scores and lads taking on each other one-on-one more. And look, the answer to your question, it's a roundabout answer, but yeah, I think a lot of people that are into both sports would prefer probably hurling, because it's just more exciting and more things happen than they do in football at the minute. On certain games, but some football games are very exciting, you know.
Definitely, yeah. Like, on the Kerry game, Kerry looked like, I know Clare were poor, but Kerry were a different animal this weekend. They were sharp from the word go. Tony Brosnan on fire.
Yeah, no, they definitely looked like they got a good bank of training in. Talking about, I think they went away and they got a lot of running done into the legs and they got their sharpness back up. They sort of seemed to learn from Tyrone from last year, who they won their All-Ireland, came back from the holiday late, straight into the McKenna Cup like the day after they came home. And then they spent the whole season chasing their tail and they never looked like they'd ever got going, really. Kerry got what they needed from the league. You know, it was, they were never going to win the league, you know, because it was just about sort of catching things up. The players missing, you know, with like the Fossil lads and stuff from playing in the All-Ireland final junior. So it was about getting the team together, getting them back up to speed, and then taking that bank of training and then going and attacking the Munster Championship. And sort of, they're just purring nicely, I think, now. They look really, really sharp. They're so, so slick, and they were able to run the bench. You know, they got the full benefit of it. Clare were, I don't want to be too critical of Clare, you know, they're two divisions below. It's a mismatch. It was always going to be a mismatch. They tried to set up fairly defensively, but they didn't really get any hands on. There's not much you can take from it. It's going to be a big blow to their confidence now going into this Super 16s, whatever it is you want to call it. But yeah, Kerry look very, very sharp, and I think hardly the one to watch because they're reigning champions, but they don't look like they're suffering from second season syndrome for sure.
The Galway Sligo game probably was followed a similar sort of pattern. Sligo did get a good start, but the game was, once Matthew Tierney got that first goal, it was, it was nearly curtains for Sligo. I actually had them back to cover the handicap, which was 12 points, and they let me down there. They lost by 14. But Matthew Tierney was the man of the moment. He kicked 2-7, and I suppose he's nearly the main man at the minute himself, and Comer on fire. Shane Walsh, Park Joyce said after the game that he was bedridden all week, and that's why they took him off early. You thought he looked unhappy coming off the pitch. I thought it was just a kind of a natural reaction now, but
don't exaggerate what I said. I thought he looked surprised at least to see the scoreboard coming up, and then he sort of scumpered off. But like, who would be happy coming off the pitch 5 minutes into the second half? Potter Joyce came out and said that, like, yeah, he'd been sick during the week. But I think it's just the only reason it's led into conversation at all is that he hasn't been playing brilliantly this season, you know. And then our expectations for him are so ridiculously high because of that unbelievable performance that he put in the All-Ireland final against Kerry. But he's kind of always been in like us, you know. He'd be on the periphery of the games and kick some unbelievable scores, or he'll be right at the heart of it where he's the main man and he sort of just can't miss. If he was sick, I just don't know whether you should have started him at all then. Like, I know it's a conic final, of course it is, but like, if they really thought they were in any danger of losing to Sligo, especially with the likes of Matthew Tierney flying, Ian Burke's a real player up front as well, he looks flying fit. But all the real credit goes to Matthew Tierney for stepping up. Last year people were saying he needs to get involved in the scores more. Well, you can't really beat that 2-7.
Definitely not. Did you come up against Shane Walsh with Kilmacud Crokes this year, Conal? Did you play them, or...?
No, I don't think so. Obviously, I've seen him in a lot of the club actions, and I didn't think he'd do as well as he did in Dublin. I thought he would have been marked a lot tighter, but he just seemed to excel in every game, and it's very hard to touch a lad. Obviously, nowadays it frees our to protect a lot of lads, and there's none of this where you get away with any of that stuff, dragging them down or intimidating them. And he certainly wouldn't be one to be intimidated, I'm sure, anyway. But no, he's excellent. Like, you've seen him through the he carried Crokes for so long in the championship. Okay, he mightn't have had an unbelievable final, but like, he was the reason they got there. There's no doubt about it. He was kicking some unbelievable scores, and look, I'd say he's just. He could be maybe fatigued, he could be whatever, but I think Park Joyce is just protecting him, you know. And it's also a little prod to him to say, listen, you know, you are who you are, but you need to perform every day. And whether he's sick or not, he still needs. If he says he's good to go, you better be good to go, mm-hmm. you know. And he might have said he was good to go and he wasn't. So, look, it's fine. Galway won and it's not an issue, but you can be sure that... Shane Walsh is going to train hard, and he'll probably be the starter next day. Like, so, yeah. And it's probably for Park Joyce. It's probably that little prod that Walsh may need just to ensure that he does make sure he puts in the work in training and make sure he performs the next day, which I'm sure he will. Like, you couldn't argue with all of his performances so far. He's dug Galway, he's dug Crokes out of a lot of holes, and. I'm sure he'll do it again this year for Galway.
Yeah, well, Colm Cooper made that point, didn't he? He said that he thought that Shane Walsh looked disinterested, and he thought Park was maybe making a point, you know, making like because it's sort of a statement substitution, isn't it? To the, even the rest of the players, look, I don't mind taking anyone off if they're not pulling their weight. So you might be right there in that it is just a little bit of a, this could be the kick that he needs, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Definitely. Look, that's Everton. We'll give a little shout out to the to Kildare and Sligo under 20s. They had two great wins at the weekend, and I'm sure you've seen Jack McEvitt's winning score for Kildare. It was an unbelievable score. The ball worked across the field, the clock, 4 minutes of injury time played, down defending for their lives, and Kildare waiting for a man to step up, and this young wing back does, it kicks it off his bad foot from what, 35 yards under the stand in Parnell Park. Not an easy score, his bad foot, I think I said that before, but this lad is meant to be the prodigy in Kildare. He was the captain of the Nace team that won the Hogan Cup, I think it was 2 years ago. And he was playing for Nace in the club championship that year as well when he was only 17. So great to see, I suppose. It'll be a novel pairing in that under 20 final, Kildare and Sligo, Conal.
Yeah, no, it is, yeah. Yeah, and it should be a great game of football. And look, it's great to see new teams coming along, be it Sligo winning or Kildare. Like, it's just great to see it. And I'm supposed going forward, they're going to try and get as many lads as they can onto the senior squad, because with that rule, I think that rule needs to be just, I think you probably talked about it before.
Oh, yeah.
Just get rid of it. Like, as a young lad, you want to play obviously with your senior team, but you also want to play with the 20s, and lads are able to do it. Like, if they're not back to back games Saturday, Sunday, but no, it's exciting, and it's great for Kildare football, and it's great for Sligo football. You know, even though they're on mid, their seniors aren't maybe firing at the minute, but it's great to see it, and new teams is always welcome.
Yeah, and they're definitely two common teams, definitely, because Kildare got to the final last year and lost to Tyrone, and Sligo got to the semi-final, so they're two common teams.
It'll be time to split them in two, will it?
Well, that could be for
they'll be
day.
Playing in group parks, isn't it? All their home teams.
Yeah. Listen, I have Conor Myler interview coming up. I was chatting to him last week, so hopefully that's enough. It was a lot of hurling talk today, but I'm sure the football snobs will forgive us. Thanks a million. Hello everyone, I'm delighted to be joined by Conor Myler, as AIB have announced a 5-year extension to its sponsorship of the Club Camogie, Club Camogie and Football Championships. Conor, how's it going?
Good now, how are you?
Not too bad. A lot of people are calling it the group of death yesterday. What do you think?
To be honest, when you really look at it, I think group one and group four are probably through the big groups. Group one, you'll potentially have a Kerry or a Clare, say it's a Kerry and a Mayo in the same group. Two of the, if you're looking at the betting, it's two of the top four teams. So but yeah, I think every group at this stage now is going to be tough, and I don't think any team will be taking any game for granted at this stage, especially the way there's such an incentive to win each group, and then there's no real dead rubber, because if you're to come third, you're still going to get an opportunity to get through. So I don't think there's any group in particular you'd have loved to been in, or any that you would have been too fearful of.
Yeah, like, definitely adds to the excitement of the whole thing, I'd say. Was it a little bit different, maybe the Monaghan game when the setup was going to be different this year?
To be honest, no. For us in Ulster, I'd have taken your hand off for another Ulster medal, or to be playing another Ulster final. I think the provincial here is so competitive, and I don't know, is it bragging rights over your neighbours or whatnot, but it's so competitive that you still want to win it. And we were going into that game, you know, fully prepared to try and win the game. And it's probably only in hindsight then, after a couple of days of feeling sorry for yourself and licking your wounds, that you realise, right, we're okay here. It's not the be all and end all, and that you have an opportunity still within the All-Ireland. But in terms of your preparation, you know, we were going full out for the game.
Did you enjoy the battle with Stephen O'Hanlon? The camera seemed to follow you around the place. I'm not sure if you've seen that now, but
I did enjoy it, and I have a lot of respect for him. He's somebody we would have targeted as one of Monaghan's main men, and I would have done my homework on him. Like, he was phenomenal in the league for them. Some of the scores he had got and his footworks, it's fantastic. And he's somebody I would rate as a top player. So I enjoy those battles. Now, look, some days you come out on top and other days you don't. I'd say it was a bit of a ding dust one, and I got my 2 points in the first half and he got his goal in the second half, and probably the goal came at such a tough time. And that's the risk you run when you're marking top players, is they're probably going to score at some stage and they're going to get inside you, and you have to accept that. And I've probably got better at learning to accept that as well. Like, they want to win as much as you want to win. But no, I enjoy the battle. And again, he's a top class player, and he pushed me the whole way, and you shake hands after and you can smile and have a laugh with each other. I know Stephen from last summer when he was out in Chicago, and he's a really good lad as well. So it was a good battle.
And those are the things you kind of play for, like a battle like that, and you know, you can get stuck into each other, and then at the end of the day you can shake hands, and that's that. Like,
yeah, and that's the way I play now. Like, I enjoy those matchups. I enjoy putting myself against the best players, because ultimately I want to be able to see, right, where am I at here? Where am I really at? And again, you'll push them hard during the game, and then it's all respect after, because, as I say, you appreciate and you respect what other inter-county players are going through, and for them to reach the heights they have, you know, there's no real bad blood between anyone. So yeah, I enjoy it. You always know that you run the risk of potentially getting skint on any given day, because you're going to be up against a top player, and you just have to take all that into consideration too. But no, I enjoy it.
Yeah, like Stephen in particular, he's a lad who I'd see is kind of similar to you in terms of his athleticism is a huge part of his game, and he's so quick on the turn and with the sidestep. Like, how do you mentioned there that you've done a lot of preparation. Like, what is the preparation that you do for, like, when you have an individual, whether it's Stephen O'Hanlon or Paddy Clifford or someone like that?
Yeah, well, they're all different as well. Now, like the likes of Stephen O'Hanlon, his footwork and his pace is electric. He's probably one of the quickest that I've come across, without a doubt. So how you prepare for that? Again, if the week of the game, if you know you're going to be marking someone like that, it's a case of in training, can you match up with someone similar? And then after training, you know, if you get a few one-on-ones, you're doing your video analysis, you're trying to see, right, what do they tend to do when they get the ball? How can I counteract that? And then on the flip side, you know, how can I influence my game? So for me, it's a case of getting on the ball and going forward as well. And probably, kind of alluded to it there as we were talking, sometimes you just have to let go and accept that good players are going to make good plays and good things are going to happen. And it's a case of what you're able to do on the next play, or how you can impact the game yourself as well.
Was athleticism always a strong part of your game, or was it something that, like, when you were younger, you just focused on, like, you know, I'm going to be the best athlete I can be kind of thing?
Probably twofold. Like, I've always been very driven and very competitive. So I've always enjoyed, you know, that challenge and coming up against good players. But I would have done a lot of cross-country running, athletics when I was younger, even road running up until you were 17, 18, 19. So, and then it gave me a really good base to go and play when you were sort of specializing as such and you're going down the GAA route. So for me, it probably was a case of working on my pace and my footwork in the last 4 or 5 years, try and get that up to another level, because you always had a really good base in terms of fitness. So, but you see now that the importance of having speed, and I would have done work with different coaches in the past just as a curious person. Like, so it's a case of how can I get the most out of myself and what areas can I be looking at, and speed was probably, and footwork were two of the things that I'd really targeted and tried to work on in the last number of years. And you definitely need it if you're going to be coming up against top players like you have.
Like you do so much preparation, whether it's, you know, you mentioned there going to coaches, focusing on footwork, stuff like that. Like, do you think there is there much between like GA and preparing for GA? Is there much of a difference, do you think? Is there any more you could do, I suppose, what I'm trying to say? Like, if you were a professional athlete, to try and prepare for games, like?
I think the way GA is now, it's as professional, if not more, than other sports. And I say that knowing, I have spent a lot of time looking at other sports, and just the nature of who I am would be quite curious to see what are other people doing in other sports and where that has got them. You always want to look at the best and see how you can get an edge as well. But at the moment, the way that Gaelic has gone, teams are training 3-4 nights on field. They're doing their gym. We have nutritionists. Some teams have their psychologists. Fellas are working one-to-one with coaches outside of it. Like, it's as professional as you're going to get. And I really don't know. Like, you have the video analysts. You have all the works. Like, I really don't know where the next stage is for fellas. For me, sometimes it's actually getting a point of letting go, because I would have maybe got consumed in the past by trying to do more and more and more until a point where it just breaks you down, that you physically can't do anymore. And learning to let go and accept the fact that, right, it's a game. There's so much that can be left to chance. Like, I'd still factor in my skill work as well. And there's only so much you can do in a week. And then you have to really accept the fact, right, the work's been done, and go out and try and play with a wee bit more freedom and abandonment and enjoyment, because that's why you fell in love with it in the first place. It wasn't the all the extras and the added stuff that you fell in love with initially. It was just the game and being able to play it as a cub. So trying to get back to that sometimes is also powerful.
Yeah, we had Jamie Clark on last week, and he was kind of making the point that like, some players can, you know, you can become so consumed in whether it's the gym work, and, you know, as you said as well, there are only so many hours in the week that, you know, do you think some players can, like, at times forget about the skills just when there is so much, you know, so much athletic preparation to do as well?
Yeah, and I think Jamie spoke well, and I think he alluded to the point that players enjoy it, and that's the level we're at now, that you're not forcing players, you know, to say you have to go to the gym, you have to do the extra skills and all the rest. And I do it because I love it as well. And I look at areas of my game that I need to improve on, and I'll go away and try and work on it. But I don't see it as a massive chore either. And I think we're at that point now to be able to play inter-county football. That's at the high level. You have to, there's a lifestyle and everything that goes along with it. And you're buying into that as much as anything else. But the big difference, obviously, we have is fellas are working or they're students, and you have that fine, that balance between that work, life, social, and all the rest. You only have a certain amount of hours in the day, as we'd said, because you are working or studying or whatever you're at. So it's trying not to burn yourself out as well. For me, priority is availability for pitch sessions and games. So then you're from that, you're trying to taper off and see what else can I factor in, or what's the priority here? Is my priority this week getting an extra skill session in, some shooting? Is my priority going to the pool, sauna, ice bath? Or is the priority this week to get some miles in the legs, or get some more strength or power work done? And different weeks will require different things. So you're probably looking at it from that as well now.
Isn't that the thing that at the top level, the gym work, say, that you'd be doing, like, it's all related to whether it's speed off the mark and turning, and, you know, it is all part of the game anyway. I suppose it's probably maybe like at the lower level, where someone mightn't have the right program, and maybe just going into kind of lift heavy is maybe where the, you know, the problems could arise there, where you're not actually kind of focusing on game related stuff.
Yeah, I think it's individualized as well, and you have to have a certain level of self-awareness and probably good people around you to guide you as well. But individual in the sense that the training I was doing at 17, 18 is very different than the training I'm doing now. And if you're a younger player trying to break onto a team, or if you're an older player trying to get yourself fit and healthy and available, they're two different kind of training weeks. If you're a player who's trying to improve your speed or power, if you're a player who's trying to lose a bit of weight, whatever it might be, Niall, you're probably looking at an individual aspect. It's having good coaches around you then as well to guide you and say, look, this is an area of game, your game, you need to work on. If it is on field, off field, whatever it might be. And for me at the minute, it's taken, well, this will be what, 9th season with Tyrone. Every year it looks a wee bit different, and my priorities now are very different than when I started at 20. So, and that'll even change month to month, week to week as well. But it's having that self-awareness and probably good coaches around you to guide that.
You mentioned how like easing off is even something that you have to focus on. Is that something you find hard to do?
It is, and it's something that I've definitely got better at, is being able to switch off. Like you can't go all the time. You have to come down the mountain before you climb again. Like there's been times in the past where you're just running on empty, and I think you're looking at the schedule and you're saying, right, there's times a year you want to peak for, and ultimately games are the priority and peaking for the games. And that's where I've learned to taper off and factor in. I probably spend more time on recovery work and being able to move and flow and keep the body fresh compared to what I would have done in the past. Like I've built up a really good base now, and you have your pre-season and you build up your robustness through mechanic cup and league games and stuff. So now it's a case of just getting the body right outside of training. Like what you're doing away from the field will have a massive impact on what you're able to do on it. So yeah, the way I look at it now is just trying to be fit and available for every session, for every game. And that probably requires a lot more recovery work than it required at 17 or 18, where you felt you could just go, go, go all the time.
Just one or two more questions here now, because I know we're running out of time. But like, how do you switch off? Like in the off season, would you go on a holiday? Would you a few pints with the lads, or would you kind of stay going the whole time, stay doing a little bit, or would you be able to take a break?
Yeah, I would keep moving anyway. And it's not because you see it as a chore to say I love training. Like if I retire, I'll be training anyway, regardless. And try to get a few foreign holidays penciled in. I was in Kenya even. On a trip, a really good trip it was Gaelic Games and GPA sort of trip with Self Help Africa and Brighter Communities. So things like that too, that are quite active, and it's not necessarily lying in a sun lounger, but you have to switch off as well, because mentally it's such a taxing season and you're going from county to club and it's requiring your full energy all the time, that you do have to find time to switch off. For me, that could be going to a sauna, going for a walk with my girlfriend, going to a coffee shop with good friends, good company. All those things for me are good switch-off times.
Yeah. Just last question. I'd say your dad is a bit of an inspiration as well. He ran the marathon in the garden shed during the COVID, I seen at one stage. Just the last question is, I read the article you had on leadership. And I'm just wondering, like, as a GA player, like, how does, like, yourself, you were maybe more of a fringe player at the start, and now you're clearly one of the main leaders in the Tyrone dressing room. Like, how do you kind of go from to become a leader, I suppose, in a GA dressing room? Is it kind of a mix of, or is it mostly through actions, or is it kind of a mix of both?
Yeah, leadership's it's ever evolving, and I don't think there's one right way to describe it or sum it up. And as a person, you develop over time as well. And for me, in my role, probably just that's coming back to that authenticity thing of being yourself and being comfortable in yourself in that dressing room, to be able to give the best version of yourself. And actions will always speak louder than words, but in some cases it's how you go about that. It could be a quiet word with somebody who's struggling, a word of somebody walking off the pitch, or a phone call to somebody that evening, rather than banging walls and banging tables. And that would be the kind of leader I would see myself as, and other people have other strengths in other areas. And it's a case of bringing it all together for the collective, for the group. I don't think there's really one way to do it. I'm doing a PhD at the minute, and leadership is a big part of that. It's something I've been studying now for a long time. Still don't quite know the right way to go about it. And there's different scenarios require different types of leadership. So it's just ever evolving, really.
Yeah. Thanks, Connor, and thanks to AIB for that. Connor, best of luck for the year.
Good man, yeah, thanks.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.